Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender here with Ted Ross, and
Hello.
We are just talking all about our wonderful Christmas experience. I hope you had one as well, that you were able to have some time off, unwrap a lot of presents. Maybe you were wrapping presents. I don't know. I feel like I do more wrapping than unwrapping these days.
Yeah, it seems a little bit more labor intensive the older you get, right?
Well, every time leading up to Christmas, I kept seeing these ads for toy commercials, and they have a Barbie dream house on one of them. Mm-hmm. And I am brought back automatically to me coming downstairs and seeing that Santa had brought me a Barbie dream house. It was one of my best Christmases for sure.
You just can't believe you actually got it, right? You feel so special. Yeah. Oh, it's fun to see your kids experience that though too. And
right.
Hope you had a good holiday there. Now, but of course, with all the costs for these things comes the bill, right? The credit card bill. If you put them on credit cards,
right.
It's coming in just a few weeks.
Well, it's kind of funny because my son, when he was younger and we were talking about gifts for Christmas, he said, well, I'm going to ask Santa for that one because then it's free.
If only. Right?
If only, yes, that's true. Well, those bills are going to come due as we head into the new year. And so we thought it might be an appropriate time to just talk a little bit about finances. We have a show today where we're going to talk about kind of starting that year off right. And one of the things that Rachel Cruz, who's one of our guests for today, explains is that it's always good to not compare ourselves to other people, because that's what gets ourselves in that hole. Oh, my neighbor got a car. I mean, even the ads we see on television right now is talking about, ooh, your neighbor got a brand new car for Christmas. Mm-hmm. What did you get? And so to not compare and to just really be centered on God and what he would want for your money and how we can use that to not only honor him, but to safeguard our family as well.
Well, and that can turn into ministry, too. What you do, what you sell, maybe even on the side, could be used for ministry. And we have a story about that.
We do. Coming up, we are going to listen to John Stone Street and The Point.
They once were lost, now they're found. For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Doyle Owens discovered God's call on his life in an unusual way. Back in 1970, a friend told him about the surprising number of bags abandoned every year at bus stations and airports. Owens soon discovered a market eager to buy unclaimed baggage. So Doyle opened Unclaimed Baggage in Scottsboro, Alabama, selling the contents of suitcases without homes. The business exploded and eventually earned national attention from the New York Times and Oprah Winfrey. But for Doyle, who made charity a central part of his work, it was all about his customers, his community, and his faith. Doyle died earlier this month at the age of 85, leaving behind his son Brian to manage the Unclaimed Baggage Center. Brian's one of our Colson Fellows, and like his dad, sees his work as a way to provide a service, bless others, and glorify God. Every Christian should see their work the same way, no matter how strange the opportunity. With today's Point, I'm John Stone Street.
Well, it's the start of the new year. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas with your loved ones, celebrating the goodness of God and his gift to the world. Good afternoon. I'm Joe Bender, and this is Connecting Faith. Well, it was a nice break from work and from school, but now we're back to the office, and we're here at Faith Radio wanting to help you start your year off right. So today, I am happy to welcome Rachel Cruz back to the show to talk about money and putting into place money habits that can help you to live the life that you have always wanted. And with today's culture of comparison, sometimes we end up trying to live someone else's life, but on our budget, which can create some money problems that are very tough to resolve. Love Your Life, Not Theirs is the title of author and speaker Rachel Cruz's new book, where she tackles the tough subject of the comparison game and the harm that it can have on our finances. Let me tell you a little bit more about her, and we'll get her on the show. Rachel is a seasoned communicator working with Dave Ramsey and Ramsey Solutions. She travels as a speaker and author, speaking to groups both large and small, educating others on the proper way to handle their money wisely and stay out of debt. Rachel co-authored the number one New York Times best-selling book, Smart Money, Smart Kids, with her dad, and Rachel lives in Nashville with her husband and daughter, Amelia. Welcome back to the show, Rachel.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for having me back on. I appreciate it.
Well, a lot has happened since we've had you on. Not only did you create this great book, Love Your Life, Not Theirs, but you also had a daughter.
I did. I know. Yeah, I got, was pregnant soon after, so I really smart kids after we talked. And yes, Amelia, she's now approaching 2 years old, which is just crazy. So when parents say time flies, I now understand fully.
Yes. Well, even you dedicate your book to your daughter, Amelia, and in that dedication, you say that knowing you had a child coming helped you see the principles in this book in a new light. Tell me more about that.
Well, as a mom, I mean, I feel like your perspective in life changes so much, even just through pregnancy and then after having a child, so much of your life changes. And so the aspect of this book of, you know, stop comparing your life to others really took on a whole new meaning, because in one sense, it's easy because you can become so enamored, for me, you know, with this little baby that I had as I was, you know, prepping for this book release. But then at the same time, there's a whole new set of comparisons that creep into your life. So, yeah, she definitely brought some new perspective, fresh perspective as I was finishing this book.
So why is it so important for our financial future to recognize our tendency to compare?
Well, comparison, I believe, doesn't only just steal our joy, but it steals our paycheck as well. Because what ends up happening is that we spend money we may or may not have to keep up a lifestyle that we think everyone else is living and we're the ones missing out. And so that shaky foundation, it's really hard to build a financial stability and good money habits when your foundation is shaking of discontentment and comparison. And what's hard today, too, with comparison is that we're comparing our lives to make-believe. You know, social media is really the primary place where we see a picture into everyone else's life, and it's the best part of everyone's life. No one puts the bad parts on social media, and so you end up comparing your life to something that's not reality, and that's what can be very, very damaging if you let it overtake your life and your bank account.
Well, and social media is not really the enemy. It offers us such really great opportunities for many areas in life, but it does create this illusion that people are having much better lives than we are, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I say that, yeah, that social media is not the evil one, like you said, you know, but it is the vehicle that can take us down this road of comparison. So we have to be very, very careful, again, because it's everyone's highlight reel. It's the best part of everyone's life. It's the fun vacations and the fun dinners out and the redone kitchens, and that's what we see, and we don't see what's behind that, you know, possibly the credit card bill that follows that vacation or the second mortgage that was taken out to redo that kitchen. We don't see that part of everyone's life. And statistically speaking, people are struggling with money when you look at the stats of our world today. And so what you're seeing, again, isn't probably the whole reality. It's not true for everyone across the board, but definitely for some. And so you can't compare your life to that, again, just like you said, because it's the best part of everyone's life.
Well, I love the story you told in your book, Your Love Your Life, Not Theirs, about you coming home from vacation and thinking it was just this great vacation that you had, but then opening up Instagram and finding, oh, wait a minute. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, it was this trip to Charleston. It was my husband and I's first big vacation together. Now we've been married. We just celebrated our 7-year anniversary. But at the time, we were newlyweds, and we saved up, and we were so intentional. We were so good, you know, paying cash for it and really working hard for this small vacation. It was just a few nights away to Charleston, South Carolina. And when I got back, I was on Instagram looking at, you know, everything from my own friends a lot of them were celebrating their 1-year anniversaries, and they were on these week long trips to, you know, these fabulous places or the beaches and that kind of thing. And even the fashion bloggers I follow, one at the time was in Greece on this yacht. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, we just went, you know, 2 or 3 nights away, and it, you know, Charleston's wonderful, don't get me wrong, but I was like, but it wasn't this, like, tropical getaway that I feel like everyone else was taking. And I found myself, you know, thinking about the next vacation and wanting to book airline tickets and figure out what we're going to do next that was going to be bigger and better. And I had to stop myself and be like, Rachel, you're crazy. You just walked in from a great vacation with your husband. You know, relax. What are you doing? And in that moment is when I realized, wow, this whole idea that comparison, it not only makes you discontent and steals your joy from the present, but you're replacing your present with someone else's pictures. You know, someone else is taking over where you are in that moment. And that can be hard. It's a battle I feel like a lot of us do face. But learning to get over that and learn to quit the comparisons is so key, not only for, our present joy and where we're at in life, but also for our money situation and our money habits.
Well, and your book lays out 7 really wonderful habits for helping us to live this life that we want. But a lot of people, especially in this present culture of student loans and buying things on credit, a lot of people already have debt. How can we do what your book says to stay clear of debt, even when we're already a little bit immersed in it? How can we get out of that?
Absolutely. Well, steering clear of debt is a must when it comes to your finances. And so I would say, number one, stop going into debt. So if there is, you know, if the car loan is nowhere in sight to be paid off, maybe you sell the car, you cut out the credit cards, you really get in a place where you stop digging into this hole. And then number two, you create a plan to attack your debt. And we have found, helping literally millions of families across this country, how to pay off debt. And we found the most efficient way is to pay off all of your debt, smallest amount to largest amount, regardless of the interest rates. Pay minimum payments on everything and pay off your smallest debt first. Because when your behavior changes and when you can get these quick wins, it really helps you stay motivated for the bigger ones. And so paying off that debt, and then after your debt's paid off, you know, really focusing on living a debt-free lifestyle, which is going to mean saving up and paying for things, which isn't always fun. We don't always enjoy that. But the freedom that comes with not having payments releases so much in your life. It's pretty incredible.
Well, and you write about just having that, not having to make maybe that car payment or not having to make that house payment or the payment on your student loans, that this creates a different attitude at the end of every month.
It does. It gives you such freedom of not having this burden of you work hard and you sit in traffic and you deal with jerky bosses, right? I mean, your whole life can be around this misery of work. And when you have payments, you're stuck there. You're stuck in this place of, I have to pay these bills. And that's your reason to go to work. That's the reason to make this income, is to pay your car payments and Sallie Mae credit cards. Where if you didn't have those things, you know, debt, it steals your options and it steals your choices from you. And when you don't have debt, suddenly there's this freedom, you know, not only financially and emotionally, but also creatively, you know, looking at your life and saying, okay, what do I want my life to look like? What do I want my career to happen? So it takes on so much more than just the financial side of your life, because when you have your income come in and you get to decide what to do with it, you get to decide to invest it or give it or spend it. You have that power of your income, but you also make different choices with your life and your career even.
Well, and it does free up that part of our mind that seems to be engulfed in worry all of the time. We're worrying about whether or not we're going to be able to pay off this or pay off that. And when you remove that, it does allow you to think a little more freely and more creatively.
Yes. Yeah. The debt, the stress and the worry that comes with it, and being able to put good money habits in place. For you to be intentional with your money and have a plan and really, have that freedom is amazing.
Well, I love your chapter that's titled Marry Your Money. And in it, you challenge those of us who are married to not let comparison also filter into that relationship, the relationship with our spouse. Why is this especially dangerous?
Well, with your relationship with your spouse, I mean, it can cause so many marriage fights and money problems. And actually, the number one cause of divorce in America today is money fights and money problems. And it affects our relationships, because money is never just about money. It really reveals our goals in life, our dreams, our values, our fears. And so many spouses are on separate pages when it comes to their money situation, and it really does create this level of tension where you can get on this page of the opposite and say, you know, we're going to agree on where our money's going. We're going to agree to be one with our money, and it's amazing the unity that comes out of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm talking to Rachel Cruz today. She's the author of a new book called Love Your Life, Not Theirs, and in it she gives us 7 money habits for living the life that we want. We'll be right back with Rachel on Connecting Faith.
Just survive.
Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, we're trying to start the new year off right by helping you to control your spending, control the money that comes in and out of your house. And with that, we're talking to author Rachel Cruz about her new book, Love Your Life, Not Theirs, Seven Money Habits for Living the Life You Want. Rachel, one of the things that we were just talking about before the break is that it's important for us who are married to not be in this comparison trap with our spouse. But you also write that maybe these are some conversations you should have with the person that you are potentially going to marry before you get into marriage so that this doesn't become some bone of contention with your relationship. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, talking about money before marriage is so, so important. And again, not only the comparison conversation, but even down to, you know, how much debt do they have? Are they a spender? Are they a saver? You know, really talking through this, because again, it creates so much tension for so many people out there. And for you to be on the same page even before you get married, you just have a huge leg up. And really talking about it, which I always say, don't be like the crazy girl where, you know, your first date, you're like, how much credit card debt do you have? How much money do you make a year? You know, you don't want to be one of those people because you probably won't get a second date. But as the relationship progresses and as it gets serious, especially, you know, when you're engaged, gosh, this has to be a part of conversations. And again, just getting on that same page. And you have to remember, though, opposites attract. So in a relationship, whether you're married or just dating, usually one of you is a spender, one of you is a saver. And that's how my marriage is. I'm actually the spender in our marriage, and my husband's the saver. But what it does is you see that, you know, opposites are going to attract. So you really have to find the median between you two as you sit down and talk and embrace your differences. But as a mature person, you have to have both in your life. You know, if you're a spender and you spend everything you make, you're going to be broke. So that's not a plan. And if you're a saver and you just save everything, you're probably not even going to have a social life, or you're not going to have any kind of fun life. So you want to be able to spend and enjoy the money you've worked for. So there definitely is going to be a balance as you approach the conversation. But don't forget that opposites attract, so embrace that.
Well, and it seems like it's so much easier to have that conversation with the person that you love than to be given that conversation by your parents, you know, because, I mean, maybe you're not like this with your dad, but as you're growing up and in college, you kind of think, oh, my dad and mom, what do they know about my money? And then you get married, and then that conversation seems like it's a lot better when you're having it with this person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with. It gets really serious at that point, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it brings out a lot of fun things as well. Because when you talk about this, I always tell spouses, and even if you're, you know, engaged or your relationship serious, dream a little and just say, gosh, what do we want to do in 5 years? You know, what does it want to look like? What kind of house do we want to live in? You know, even at retirement, you know, which may be years and years down the road, decades for some people. But think, you know, if we could retire tomorrow, what do we want to do? Do we want to have a second home at the beach? Do we want to take a vacation twice a year? You know, you really do get to dream, and you have a say over your life. I mean, money is finite, so there are going to be limits and boundaries, of course. I'm not saying be unwise with it, but really do dream and say, what do we want our life to be together? And those are always fun. My husband Winston and I, you know, we'll do that every now and then, sometimes just accidentally, as we're at dinner and we're talking about something, and you kind of just get in this, you know, fairy tale land in a way, in a good way, just to say, okay, you know, what do we want life to look like? And you get to make those decisions and those choices to get to your dream and your goal. And doing it together is the unifying piece there. You know, there can be so many times where a wedge is driven between you two because you feel like you can't get on the same page. But when you just do, you know, find that common ground and then start to dream, it is fun conversation. It sounds so nerdy as we're talking about it, but really, there is so much fun in those conversations.
No, we enjoy doing that as well, because our parents are now at the age where they're enjoying the benefits of all of the hard work that they have put into saving and being ready for retirement. And so when we see that happening, we think, well, we want to be there too. And so it is a great motivator to use and spend wisely at this point. And one of the chapters that in one of the chapters you've written, you do talk about you need to make your money work for you. Can you talk more about how we can think about our future and put that money to work for us both now and in the future?
Well, there's a couple of things that can go into play. I mean, I look at the overarching idea, which for so many people, they've missed this, and it's making a plan for your money. It's being on a budget and really telling your money what to do. And so many people live their lives year after year, sometimes decade after decade, and they look back and they say, you know, I worked so hard, but I have nothing to show for it. I have no clue where my money's gone because they just weren't intentional. And so really being in the position where you're telling your money what to do, living on a written plan month to month, and being very, very purposeful with where your money goes is key. And then also looking into things, practically speaking, that can help your money work for you, like investing and look into the future and look at retirement. But I would say all that conversation is to be had after you're debt-free and you have a fully funded emergency fund. And once that strong foundation's in place, then yes, look into things like retirement investing, 401ks, and Roth IRAs. We won't get into all of that now because it's a little boring, but the exciting part is that your money starts working for you when you start investing. And you have to look at this, too, that debt and investing are opposites, because with debt, you pay interest. With saving, you earn interest. And so that's what you really have to think through is as soon as you can be able to be debt-free and stop paying someone else, you know, paying interest is a penalty, my friend Chris Hogan says, which I love. And so when you can stop that part of your life and really start turning on the other, yeah, your money starts working for you.
You know, Todd, you write so eloquently just about giving and not only the financial benefits of doing so, but spiritual benefits of doing so as well. How has giving really helped change the way that you look at money? And how should it help us as well?
Well, giving changes so much because I think it really reveals our character. At the end of the day, this may sound harsh to some people, but I think it's true. Money is not a math issue. Giving isn't a math issue. It's a heart issue. Where is your value? So many people say, well, I don't have the money to give. And yes, some people are very, you know, paycheck to paycheck, their budgets are so, so tight. But I tell people to give a little until you can give a lot. Because at the end of the day, you know, look at what you're paying. And if you have zero money to give, I'd say that's a problem. Because giving, it not only changes the person or the organization you're giving to, but it changes you. Because in a world that is so self-focused, and it's all about me and my happiness and what I want, when you start giving, you go on the spectrum of selfish to selfless, where other people, become part of your world in a sense, you know, where you say, you know what, life is not all about me. What can I give back? And living with that open hand mentality when it comes to your money, the joy and the fun that will come over your life, I really believe this, comes out of giving. And start where you are. Again, some people may be so tight, but when you're in Starbucks, pay for the person behind you. That's just an extra $5 or whatever it is. Find little ways to give. Because ideally, once you're out of debt, you have this emergency fund in place, you're investing and you're doing all of these things, you're going to start accumulating wealth. And money is a magnifying glass. It's going to make you more of what you already are. And so you want to be able to project and magnify the giving part of you. That's part of your character of when you started, when you didn't have a lot, which may be where people are right now. So really give a little until you can give a lot.
Mm. That's excellent advice for the beginning of the year and all year through as well. Thanks so much, Rachel Cruz, for joining us today. Her book is called Love Your Life, Not Theirs, 7 Money Habits for Living the Life You Want. Rachel, where can people find out more information about you?
You can go to rachelcruz.com is my website, and I'm on all social media, so Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the above. And I have a YouTube channel as well, just Rachel Cruz.
Well, Rachel, have a happy new year and blessings to you and your family.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us on Connecting Faith. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Well, as you know, it's the beginning of a new year. And so, of course, we're talking about finances. How do we get set for the year ahead? And if you're one of those people, like millions of American, who kind of depend on credit cards, you're dreading that January statement coming from Christmas, or maybe you're living paycheck to paycheck and you feel like accumulating wealth is just this fantasy that will never occur. Well, we have some practical advice for you today to really get started. My guest for this half hour is Steve Repack. He's written just a fabulous little book called The 6-Week Money Challenge for Your Personal Finances. And he's put some real practical advice together. And it doesn't say you're going to be debt-free in 6 weeks, but that you will have put together some really great habits that are going to help you eventually get there. Let me tell you a little bit about Steve. Steve Repack is a certified financial planner. He's an Army veteran, a financial literacy speaker, and an author. He's been a frequent guest on many major television networks, radio programs, and his work has been featured in publications such as Forbes, Investor's Business Daily, and USA Today. Steve lives in Charlotte, North Carolina, with his wife and three children. Welcome, Steve.
Hey, Jill, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, I was so intrigued by your story of, you know, a lot of times we read financial planning books and we don't really know if the people who've written the book have gone through any financial challenges and had a need to put together some good practices. But you did. Tell me a little bit about your story and how you came to put these practices in your life.
Yeah, I was raised in a small town in right outside of Vidalia, Georgia, and our family, we just didn't have a lot of money. You know, I never remember going hungry. We always had a roof over our head. But when I was in high school, kids made fun of the clothes that I wore and things like that. And we were poor. And I joined the military right out of high school. It was kind of funny. It was the first time that I saw real money. And in the military, what's kind of cool is that everything is paid for, housing, your clothes, your food, and I'd always find myself living paycheck to paycheck, even though all that stuff was paid for. And when I got my first promotion, I got my first credit card, and I didn't know anything much about credit cards except that, hey, it was something that I thought that it was like free money that I could just buy whatever I want. There was no consequences about that. And so throughout my military career, it seemed like I would get promoted. I would make, I'd earn more money from the promotion, and then I'd always get a letter from the credit union saying, congratulations, we've increased your credit limit. And I would go out there and get my credit cards maxed out. And I just seemed to do that year after year after year. And, after 12 years of service, I racked up more than $32,000 worth of credit card debt. And, so I know exactly what it feels like to live paycheck to paycheck, with messed up credit, a ton of credit card debt, no money in savings, and very little hope. And what was cool is that, God opened a door for me in finances, and it wasn't something that I thought that I was going to, that's where I wanted to be when I got out. But it was just like, it's one of those things. And it was like, God has a sense of humor, how he can use anybody. And he definitely, used my story to help people make better financial decisions with their own money. And, once I started applying biblical principles and just applying just solid financial, sense to my own money, I was able to get out of credit card debt, build up my credit and start, putting money away for my savings and retirement. And, I just wanted to help other people, do the same, because like I said, a lot of times is that, most people are struggling with their finances. They got some type of credit card debt. They're not, they don't have anything in their short-term savings. They haven't properly planned for retirement, and they're not giving back to God and like they should. And God just wants us to be good stewards of our financial resources. And just because you're a Christian, that doesn't mean that God is going to sit there and bless you financially. But he still expects us all to be good stewards with what he has blessed us with. And so that's why I came up with the book, to help other people just to get their money priorities in check, because it's not always what you know, it's what you do. And a lot of times people just spit out all this information, so you have all this information, but if you don't actually apply it to your money, nothing ever changes. So that's why I came in with the 6-week money challenge, where each week I give the reader specific challenges to complete, and then at the end of the 6 weeks you kind of review everything that you've learned and everything that you applied, and you figure out what you did good, the things that you didn't do so good, and things that you can do better. So it's something that you can always use it. Like I probably recommend people to, they buy the book, do the 6-week money challenge, and then six months later, go ahead and pick up the book and redo it again, because just like anything in life, we become complacent, we get lazy. So we get at the beginning of the year, we're all fired up saying, yeah, we're going to get our finances in check, and then by the summertime, we're back in the same bad habit. So we have to pick up a book, get our accountability partner, and get back on track. And if we do that, we're just going to make better, better decisions. And then, we're going to be better stewards with our resources that God blessed us with.
Well, and you mentioned that one of the greatest ways to get back on track financially is to pay down debt. But you also say that we need to start a savings and make sure that we have enough in savings, because when something unexpected happens, that's when our best laid plans get a bit thwarted, don't they?
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, you know, as Christians, you know, we think, well, gosh, is it a sin to save? Does that mean that we're not relying on God? And, you know, throughout the Bible, God's always talking about, you know, earthquakes and famines and bad times. And, you know, we need to be good stewards, and saving is how we become a good steward with our resources, because it's not an if question. It's a when question, because, you know, your transmission is going to go out, or your dog might swallow a golf ball, or, you know, something just comes up. And if you don't have savings, you know, you're just always going to stay in debt. And that was with me, is that, you know, I'd always have good intentions. You know, I'd be putting money to, you know, get out of debt, and I had nothing in savings. So whenever I had one of those emergencies to pop up, I'd always have to rely on a credit card. So I'm like thinking, okay, I can't be continue to do the same stuff over and over again. So basically what I did is I started, you know, I built up my savings to around $500. And that was like my first goal, is that, so I made minimum payments on my credit cards. And so I built my savings up to $500. And then once I built up to $500, then I started paying down, you know, paying more towards my credit cards, but I needed that cushion. And then whenever I had an emergency that popped up, you know, I had the money right there in savings, and, you know, I didn't have to rely on my credit cards.
Well, and that's such great advice, because when something like that happens, if we've paid all of our money toward our credit card debt, or maybe our house, or whatever debt it is that we have, then there's no money that we have if we have to access it very quickly. And then you'd go into debt again, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that was my issue. Is that, like I said, I'd be on track, and it seemed like, okay, I'm actually knocking down some debt, and then something always would pop up. I'm telling you, and it was like one of those things that financially it doesn't make sense, because you know savings accounts aren't paying anything, and you know most credit cards are, you know, they're charging anywhere between 12% to 16% interest. So you think that, okay, financially I need to pay off my credit cards because I'm not going to earn any money in savings. But the truth is that, you know, the cure for debt is savings, just as the cure for greed is to give. And you know, like I said, a lot of stuff that we have to be like counterculture, you know, stuff that doesn't make sense. But it's, you know, if we put these practical steps, like, hey, if I want to get out of debt, I got to build up my savings, because if I don't have any money in my savings, I'm never going to get out of debt. And, you know, just like, you know, your money priorities, if you don't give first, you know, you're never going to be able to, you know, be a good steward of your financial resources, which, you know, a lot of times, you know, people on the outside or, you know, non-Christians, or they just kind of look at you like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. But the people that I know that are good with their finances, I mean, they're, you know, they're very good givers, you know, they're good savers, and they got their money priorities straight.
Well, one of the things that you talk about very early on in your book is that one of the best ways to get started is to just track your spending, how much money is going out, how much money is coming in. And you say everything from that $4 coffee to maybe the $10 or $15 lunches, that everything makes a big difference if you add it up toward the end of the month. Talk a little bit more about that, and what's a good way to start tracking your spending?
Yeah, you know, there's no secret that people who don't run out of money at the end of the month are the ones who spend less than they make. And that's the whole key, is that with me is I thought that my next promotion, or I had to earn more money, and that's the only way that I'd ever have more money. But the truth is that I just had to learn how to spend less. And a lot of times we just, you know, with the way that, you know, we use credit cards and debit cards and things like that, is that we just spend money and we just don't even think about it. So the only way that you can know what you're spending is you got to track it. And, you know, if you're old school and you like to get out a pen and paper, you know, anytime you spend money, you go, you know, you ask for a receipt, and you write it down when you get home. Or if you're somebody that likes to, you know, use your technology and, you know, want an app to track your expenditures, I mean, that's fine too. I mean, the key is just you need to know what you're spending your money on, because once you know what you're spending your money on, then you can figure out what's more important. So, for example, is that I used to go out to eat all the time for lunch. You know, even when I was in the Army, when my food was paid for, but I'd still, you know, I'd go out to eat for lunch. And you're thinking, okay, that's really not a big deal. But, you know, that was like $5 a week. You know, you take times five, times seven, you know, 7 days a week, that's $35 a week. You multiply it times four, that's $120 that I was spending just on going out to eat for lunch. And I'm not saying that you can't go out to eat, but, you know, maybe just reduce the amount. So, for example, for me is that instead of going out to eat every single day, maybe I did it maybe 3 days out of the week. So, you know, I was able to save $60 just from not going out to eat for lunches. And like I said, for the mundane stuff is that, you know, we go up and we get our morning ritual, we buy our coffee, and, you know, we're spending $5 a day on our lattes, and, you know, we're spending $3 a day at the vending machine, and all this little stuff that we think that really doesn't amount to anything, you know, $100, $200 a month of just wasteful spending that if we could just write it down and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I'm spending this much money on this or this much money on that. And, you know, I wrote an article about housing expenditures. I mean, you know, there's a quick way you can save $300 a month just on your housing expenditures just by knowing exactly how much money you're spending, you know, how much you're spending on cable, how much you're spending on your cell phone. And so, you know, you're never going to be able to cut money out of your spending unless you know where you're spending it.
That's such great advice, and it seems like it would take a lot of work to figure it out, but it would be so well worth it because it's really the foundation for the rest of everything that you're teaching.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, you don't have to track your spending for the rest of your life, but it's like with everything is that just try it for 2 weeks. I mean, if you just keep a spending journal for 2 weeks, that's going to really make a big difference on your spending pattern. Because like I said, it comes down to behaviors is that like with us, we're just creatures of habit and we just seem to do the same things over and over again. And then we expect to get different results. And, you know, another idea is that, you know, when you're tracking your spending, start using cash. I mean, it's like it hurts to break a 20. It really does. And now it's, you know, with us, like I said, we're so accustomed to using our credit cards and debit cards, it's almost like we're not even spending money. But if we, you know, we switch, you know, to cash for 1 week and say, gosh, what I'm going to do is for this next week, I'm just going to use for cash for all my spending. You know, you start to be very conscious that, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm spending this. Or, hey, you might think, do I really need this? And, you know, it's just changing behaviors because, you know, managing money has, you know, everybody thinks, well, God, I'm not smart with it. It has nothing to do with being smart. I mean, everybody can add and subtract. It just comes down to changing your behaviors. And if you can change your behaviors, your finances will change. But if you never change your behaviors, it doesn't matter how many books you read or how many classes you take, you're still going to be bad with your money.
Well, I'm talking to Steve Repack today. He's written a book called The 6-Week Money Challenge for Your Personal Finances. We're going to help you start the year off right here by getting your finances in order. We'll talk with Steve a bit more when we come back on Connecting Faith. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks so much for joining us today. This first Friday of the year, we're kind of getting set with our finances. How do we get set out on the right foot as we head into 2017? Well, I'm so honored to be able to talk to Steve Repack today. He's a certified financial planner, an Army veteran. He's a financial literacy speaker and also an author. He's written a book called The 6-Week Money Challenge for Your Personal Finances. And in it, he lays out just 6 weeks of establishing some habits, things that we can easily incorporate into our lives that are going to help us become debt-free. And Steve, you kind of lay out the biblical foundation for why we need to be good stewards of our finances. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that played a role in your decision to finally get started on the right path with your finances?
You know, the truth is that financial matters are mentioned in the Bible more often than prayer, healing, and mercy. And so if it's mentioned so much in the Bible, you know, God thinks it's important. And I think that, you know, the people that are good with their finances, you know, there's certain things that they understand is that when they die, that they're, you know, it's, the money and their stuff is going to go to someone else. And that's, you know, it's this understanding that hey, that God's blessed you with it, expects you to be a good manager with your assets. And if you're a good manager, I mean, that's how basically you're honoring God by making the right choices. And you know, that's a big thing about, you know, like I talk about giving, and you know, with finances, is you think that, oh gosh, if I want to be better with my money, if I'm giving it away, if I'm tithing and giving, I mean, that just doesn't make any financial sense. But it's one of those God things. Is that, you know, God expects us to give, and it's not that it's like a rule that if you don't give, then, you know, God is going to sit there and punish you. But it's just like the people that are good with their finances, they always give, because that, you know, the, you know, we learn when we're young that it's always, you know, the people that give, it's better to give than to receive. I mean, there's actually science behind it, because whenever you give, the feeling you get from giving lasts longer than the feeling you get when you waste money on yourself. And so God just knows how that we're wired, and that if we can give, number one, we're going to be more joyous. We're going to be being better stewards with our resources, because if you're giving, it forces you to learn how to live off of less. And that's the cornerstone of finances, is learning how to live off of less. So if I'm giving 5%, 10%, 15%, that's just less money that I have to be able to pay for bills. So I have to be really, you know, I have to be a real good steward. I have to be managing my finances to be able to do that. But like I said, the people that give, I mean, they're just more joyous, and especially when you're giving to people that are less fortunate. Because at the end of the day, if you think that you've had a bad day, there is somebody out there that has a worse day, and the only way to understand that is to give first. And like I said, it does. If you're tied into your church, I think that's great. If you want to give to the Wounded Warriors Foundation, you know, if you want to give it to a local soup kitchen, if you want to sit there and give it to your favorite radio station, I mean, it's just learning to give and just understand that, hey, this money, it doesn't belong to me. God is just letting me borrow it while I'm here on earth, but, you know, expects me to be a good manager with it.
So you have three kids as well, Steve. How early did you start them on understanding finances in their lives as well?
You know, it's when I started, you know, once I started paying them an allowance, it's like, I talk about the 10-10-80 rule, where you give 10%, you save 10%, you live off the rest. So, you know, once my kids probably around 10 or 11, you know, I started paying them an allowance, which, you know, it's just a way to, you know, how do you get people to learn how to manage money? Well, you got to give them money to learn it. And most, you know, most kids, they just never learn that lesson. Most adults never learn the lesson. So it's probably around between the ages of 10 and 12 where, you know, I would give them an allowance, and I would expect them to give 10% of their money, and then we opened up savings accounts, so they got money in their savings, and then I let them spend the money, the rest of it, on how they, you know, however they wanted to, you know, within reason. But it's like, the only way that you can teach your kids, you know, how to manage their assets or do anything, I mean, you got to actually, you know, have them do it. Because I could tell them all day long this is what they should do, but if they don't actually do it, they're, you know, they really don't learn any lessons.
Well, and it seems like the consistency is such a big deal that we can't just say, talk about it and talk about what they should do, but we need to show them what to do as well. And sometimes that's half the battle. That helps us to get into the habit as well as parents.
Yeah, and like I said, the more good habits you have, you know, it's definitely going to be more beneficial. It's just like, you know, in the morning time, the first thing, you know, like for me, it's like, you know, I go to the gym, and then, you know, while I'm doing my cardio, I sit there and I do my Bible. I mean, that's when I do my reading. I actually do the audio version, but it's just the way that it keeps me grounded. And if I do it every single day, it's just a good habit. It's hard for me to get out of. And it's like same thing with bad habits. If you have bad habits, they'll stick with you, and it's hard to change. So you're just trying to find good habits that you're consistent with. So if you learn at a very early age that, hey, whenever I earn money, that I should give part of it away and I should save part of it, as an adult, those same type of habits will sit there and transfer over. Just like the same thing is if you see your mom and dad, you know, struggling paycheck to paycheck, they're not really giving like they should, they're not saving like they should, you know, a child is going to tend to follow that behavior. Now, there's always exceptions to the rule, but like I said, we just want to equip our children, you know, as best as we can. And like I said, that's just by establishing good behaviors and good, you know, good examples to live by. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's all that we can do is we're watchmen on the wall. You know, we can lead the horse to water. We can't make them drink, but we need to make sure that we are leading them to water.
Mm. One of the things we just started for our kids is an investment account so that they can pick some companies that they want to invest in and then track it, something that I didn't understand until I was an adult. So we're trying to help them understand that now. And you just write a great chapter about just understanding the basics of investing. And, of course, once we have some of that savings, what would we do with it if, of course, we are not into some sort of crisis? So you cover those basics so well. What is the importance of learning to invest that money that we have? How is that going to help our financial future?
You know, I always tell people that there's two types of money. You know, when we talk about savings money, there's short-term money and long-term money. And our short-term money needs to be safe and liquid. And we say, well Steve, why can't I put all my money in that type? Well, usually the safe type of money doesn't earn a lot of interest. But the types of money, like your long-term money, you have a potential of getting a higher return. Now, there's no guarantees. And that's why, like, in the book, I talk about the basics of investing, because, you know, you're supposed to make make money over time, not overnight. There's no such thing as a get-rich scheme. You know, there's no such thing as that. You know, you have to have a long-term, you know, a long-term perspective on your money. You also need to learn about compounding, which it takes time. And like I said, just being able to learn the basics. You know, number one is that what are the risks? Because with any time, wherever you put your money, there's always a risk. So you need to know what's good about it. You need to know what's bad about it. You need to know what type of fees that you have to pay on that. And you know, spreading out your, you know, you're spreading out your money. You know, you look at King Solomon. You know, that just sit there and didn't have all of his eggs in one basket. It's another tenets of, you know, with investing your money is that, you know, you can't put it all in one place. And it doesn't mean that if you spread it out, that's going to keep you from losing money, but it's just being a good manager. So that what you're trying to do is you're trying to manage your risk. Because, you know, think of this, is that if it's a risk for me to get out of bed, you know, at night, you know, if I get out of bed in the morning, I could slip and break my neck, right? So, you know, if I could break my neck by just getting out of bed, if I put my money somewhere, you know, there has to be a risk involved with that. And you just got to understand it, and you got to do it biblically. And like I said, the Bible is very, you know, it's very specific on how you should, you know, invest your money and things like that. And like I said, I have some great steps in the book that gives someone a general understanding, because that's all you need to know, is that you don't need to be a certified financial planner, but you do need to know the basics. So when you do sit down with one, that you're understanding the risk, you understand how the person's getting paid, you understand that, hey, these are what my goals are, these are what my objectives are, and things like that.
Well, and then, of course, as we move toward, once we get to the point where we've begun investing, we have some savings, we've paid down most of our debt, we want to protect that as well. So one of the weeks, you concentrate just a little bit on estate planning and even insuring your life. So why is that so important? Is it for the people who we're leaving behind? Or what is important about estate planning that we really need to know just to start us off right?
It's just the basics, is that most people think estate planning is just for the rich and famous, and it's not. Is that we all have, you know, we all have assets that we need to make sure that we're managing. And I think of it like this, is that, you know, you're married and you have kids, that, hey, you need to have a will, and you know and be able to appoint your custodians that's going to take care of your kids. Because a lot of times, you know, people think, well, gosh, I don't need a will or anything like that because I don't have a lot of money. Well, gosh, you got kids, and do you really want the state or the government to decide on where your kid's going to go? And, you know, if you think of it like that, you say, well, gosh, no, I don't. So, you know, you need to sit down and think about those types of, you know, decisions, you know, healthcare power of attorneys and living wills and things like that, just because you want to make whoever you leave behind, you know, easier for them. Because at the end of the day, if you're dead, it really doesn't matter. But it's the people that you're leaving behind that you really want to take care of, you know, your spouses, your kids, you know, friends and families and things like that. So, you know, God just wants you to, you know, expects you to plan for that type of stuff. And it's like, and if you don't, like I said, you just have to understand that if I die and I, you know, if I don't have a will in place and decide on who's going to go to my kids, you know, someone else is going to make that decision. And that person that makes that decision, they might not have the same beliefs or morals or, you know, or grounding like I do. So, like I said, those are things that you need to make sure that you have in place, just like I said, just to be a good steward with your resources.
Well, Steve, you've just laid out such practical advice in your book, The 6-Week Money Challenge for Your Personal Finances. How can people find out a little bit more about you or get a hold of your book?
Yeah, they can find me at steverepeck.com, or you can Google the 6-Week Money Challenge. But my book's available at Christian Book. It's available at Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, and most book retailers. So it's a great book. You know, and not because I wrote it. It's like, I think it's really practical. It's something that, it's one of those things that it's a doer book. It's not something that you read and you don't apply it. It's actually step by step on this is what I do, you know, get an accountability partner, put this stuff into practice. Because, like, because the only way that we can, you know, if we challenge ourselves to become better, that's the only way we become better. And if we don't challenge ourselves, we're just going to end up just continue to backslide, and that's not ever a good thing.
Well, Steve Repeck, we just thank you so much for not only writing the book, but giving us encouragement and also giving us some tips on how to get started. I wish you just the very happiest of 2017.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. You have a blessed 2017.
Thank you so much. And if you just caught part of our show and you want to hear it in its entirety, you can just go to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and we have a list of all the podcasts there. You can listen to it over and over again if you'd like, or just get a copy of the book. And that way you can follow along on your own six-week journey to personal finance success. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great day.